Look, the country has all kinds of racial issues we are dealing with, but my next guest says a lot of it is in our language. Dr. Agwu Okali is a Harvard-educated lawyer, founder and chairman of the Okali Seminal Ideas Foundation for Africa, and had a distinguished career in the United Nations. And he's the author of the new book, Black Servitude Without Slavery, The Unspoken Politics of the English Language. Dr. Okali, thank you for joining us on WILS.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Now, you're from Africa originally. Where are you from?
I'm from Nigeria.
Nigeria. And what was life like for you in Nigeria growing up?
Well, this was during the colonial period, actually, when I was growing up. And we just did what we were told, mm-hmm. as you do in colonial times.
I see. So how would you compare the racial atmosphere there to what you see here in the U.S.?
Well, in Nigeria now, of course, we don't have a racial problem because there is no white population as such. So,
when you were growing up, let's say,
when we were growing up, of course, there were clear signs of racial preference, but because the British, who were the colonial masters, did not really have many of their people living in Nigeria. Unlike places like South Africa or Kenya, mm-hmm. there were no white settlers as such. The white people who were in Nigeria were mostly either missionaries or government officials. Mm-hmm. So the racial conflict situation was not very great, simply because there was very little contact really between the ordinary African and the white person.
Yeah, we're talking to Dr. Agwu Okali here on WILS. His book is Black Servitude Without Slavery. So when you came to the U.S., what's your assessment of the racial condition we have now? How would you describe it?
I think the situation now is, regressing somewhat, because when I came, it was during the late 1960s, mm-hmm. and the atmosphere then was very promising. Mm-hmm. And as a student at Harvard then, there was a lot of positive vibes, positive activities pointing to a possible evolution. Mm-hmm. On racial matters. As you know, it was just at towards the end of the, and during and towards the end of the civil rights movement.
Right.
So the omens looked very positive at that time.
Now, what happened since? Why do you think things are getting worse now?
Well, I think things are not necessarily getting worse, but they are not living up to the promise. I think that's the real situation. They're not living up to the promise.
Okay. Now, when you look at our black urban communities, is racism, do you view that as the key problem they're facing now?
I say yes and no. Yes, in the sense that racism itself has created its own dynamics, which affect even people's self-esteem, their ambition, their idea as to what they can do or cannot do. Although they may not be legally precluded from doing those things, but because they've been, conditioned, mm-hmm. to think of themselves that's not for us, then they don't venture. So in that sense, while the racism itself, as in terms of racial discrimination, is legally out, it has hidden barriers that it has created.
Okay, and so what can be done about that?
I'm arguing that what is the problem here is, or the fundamental problem, is one of mindset. And this mindset is a mindset that has been if not created, certainly sustained and imparted through language.
Okay, and when you, through, in fact, your book is called Black Servitude Without Slavery, The Unspoken Politics of the English Language. And give me an example of words we're using today that are part of this dynamic.
Yeah, almost any terminology that is descriptive of quality, you know, has this problem, because you talk about black magic, for example, that's the bad magic. White magic is very good. It's magic used for good purpose. You have a black lie, and then you have a white lie.
Okay.
You know that one of the worst things you can do to someone is to paint them black.
Okay. Now, do you think this really has a direct impact, though, on the realities of African Americans?
Yes, of course. I think it does, because people have been brought up with this narrative, what I call the blackness of bad, whiteness of good. This narrative, you imbibe it from childhood and throughout life, because it's in everyday language. And you cannot live with this narrative, which runs through the English language, you know, black sheep and all these things, kettle calling the pot black. Okay. You cannot go through this without your mind, consciously or subconsciously, being conditioned to favor white things over black things.
So what do you tell black Americans to do? I mean, what's your recommendation for how to overcome this?
My recommendation is for the entire society, and that is that we need to drop these characterizations using the word black and white for the purposes that I'm talking about, like black market and so forth. Mm-hmm. We need to substitute race-neutral language, so that the mind doesn't associate black with bad and white with good, which is what I think is the fundamental problem, including the encounters with police, with law enforcement.
Right, but we see terms like black power or Black Lives Matter. Are those negative words also?
No, they're not. But they have become necessary to do that because to counter. The underlying narrative that exists. If you see what I mean, you have to now say black is beautiful to try to counter the idea that black is ugly, it's evil, and whatever. Mm-hmm. But you don't. White people don't need to do that. They don't need to say white women are beautiful. No, because society says they are, according to this narrative.
I'm curious, in Nigeria, do you feel the language has the same impact on the population there?
Yes, it has the same impact because like many countries of the world, we were a British colony, but other countries that have taken on English, also when you take on a language like English, you take all the prejudices and all the idioms that come with it. And so you find that even in a country, even in a black African country, that with the language and the thought process going on, and it creates this same problem.
Yeah, I'm curious, Dr. Aguokali, with us, when you came to the U.S., do you feel that you face a lot of racism and bias against you also then?
Not personally, and I have mentioned that was one of the curious things, if I may put it that way, that we as African students, at least at Harvard where I was, noticed that society was more receptive to us, kinder to us, and more hospitable to black African students than to African Americans.
How do you make sense of that?
I don't think that I can really explain it, except perhaps to say that maybe we were not seen as a political threat or social threat or whatever, but it was the reality, and we used to talk about it.
Did you feel, when you look at the Black American culture versus your country where you came from, Nigeria, what kind of commonality do you feel there is between the two?
Well, there's plenty of commonality, although African Americans now have become more American than African. So from that point of view, they reflect American society, whereas Nigeria still reflects mostly African society.
Mm-hmm. Is that a good thing to be more reflective of American versus African society?
If you ask me, I'll choose the African values.
Really? And how so?
Yes.
How would you describe the African values versus the American values?
The African values, they are towards hospitality, for example, towards openness, towards friendship, and family, things like that are still very important.
Mm-hmm.
And behavior is still more responsible, in the sense that one feels you are representative of your community or your group, much more so than in Western countries, not just America, where people are now more individual, and you may find somebody actually disagreeing with their families and behaving quite differently.
Mm-hmm. Look, we could talk a lot more. I wish we had more time. Dr. Agu Okali, his book is Black Servitude Without Slavery, The Unspoken Politics of the English Language. Dr. Agu Okali, distinguished career at the UN, also the founder and chairman of the Okali Seminole Ideas Foundation for Africa. Dr. Okali, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me, Michael.
Thank you. Hopefully we can talk again.